Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
Hello and welcome. You are tuned in to the Social Network Show coming from fabulous Las Vegas, where at least a million perfectly normal people live, work, and enjoy their families. There are 2 million in the metro area, so I figured that is a safe bet. You are probably already on our website, thesocialnetworkstation.com, but have you checked out thesocialnetworkassociation.com? Please do so and let us know your thoughts via the Contact Us tab. I am the anchor of the show, Dr. J, Jane Karwoski. The anchor of the show is rather like the tail of the kite. And with me today is the high-flying kite himself, Jim Nico. You'll be hearing from University of Maryland law professor Frank Pasquale. And today you'll be finding out just how much confidence you can place in the promises made by some social networks regarding service and safety. Frank, welcome back.
Oh, thanks so much, Dr. J. It's great to be back.
So, you know, one of the things we wanted to know about was if there are promises made in terms of service and so forth by social networks about privacy or what, any number of things, what kind of commitment do many of the social networks have on that? Is that something we can really count on?
Well, you know, it is something that I think we have to think really critically about, because on the one hand, when social networks and other services put out their terms of service, they do make promises. Those promises are enforceable. But when we look hard at, you know, some real concrete cases over the past 5 years where they violated the terms of service and people went to enforce them, the penalties weren't that big.
So they did go, some consumers did go to court over this.
That's right, yes. For example, I mean, with Facebook, there was some concern about, like, the Beacon settlement, where they essentially were using, they were doing advertisement or doing other forms of information transfer that they had said they would not do. And so people went to court, and it sort of gets put into a class action. And the reason for that, let me step back a bit here, is that, you know, let's say that I'm someone and I'm concerned about privacy, and I don't like the fact that Facebook is using my data in a certain way, but they said that they wouldn't do it. Okay. Now, if I sue, the court might come to me and say, well, what were your damages? And this is hard to prove. You know, it's hard to prove that just right out of the blue. Well, you know, I don't know, but maybe there'll be damages a year from now, 5 years from now, et cetera. And so that's where the problem really comes in. And then the cases all get swept up into a big class action, but then the class action could be settled, you know, at a rate of like $1 a person or $5 a person. And it doesn't really help individuals. It just sort of creates it creates foundations to do good work. But, you know, it's really not much of a deterrent.
Is this similar to, or is it the case of, for instance, promising that certain data will be viewable by friends only?
That's exactly right. So that was one of the settlements that the Federal Trade Commission came down with Facebook. You know, there was some concern about exactly how far data would be traveling, and there were assurances made that, say, only friends would get certain data or only a certain circle would get certain data. And then it turned out that actually lots of other folks could access it. And when that happens, you know, the Federal Trade Commission has a lot of good people there. They're very hardworking. But they're often a little overwhelmed, and they don't have a lot of authority to impose a big fine, you know. And especially the first time something happens, they often just getting people under a consent decree, agreeing that they won't do it again. But then the question is, at what point do we see real substantive penalties? And I don't think really substantial penalties have happened ever. I mean, a few million dollars for a company like Facebook or Google, an $8 million settlement, which I think was a recent one or one a couple of years ago, that's about 2 hours of revenue, 3 hours of revenue. It's just not that much.
Wow. So if it were a person and they were fined two or three times what they would make in an hour, yeah, that doesn't sound like much of a fine.
So what we see is that there are some entities that are out there that are trying to enforce the law, you know, but they just don't have the statutory authority or the track record of really imposing a tough punishment. And I would compare, by the way, the $8 million fine that Facebook faced over, you know, some really serious allegations a few years ago. In Europe, there's a woman named Vivian Redding, who's a really visionary activist. And she's pushing right now through European legislation.
Interesting. So if you mentioned the word consent decree. Can you just briefly explain what that is?
Oh, consent decree, yes. The word consent, in terms of a consent decree, what a lot of federal regulators will do now is they will go and instead of taking someone to trial, and they don't want to take a lot of these firms to trial because the firm like Facebook or Google has just so much more money than the regulators have. So they say, okay, we're going to save everyone's time and money here, and we're just going to do a settlement sort of thing. It's like settling the case instead of going to trial. But the consent decree is a little stronger because it actually puts into effect obligations that need to be followed. But again, the question is, if they're not followed, then what the penalty is? And often the penalty just isn't that much.
Okay, so Jim has a thought, I think.
Frank, again, welcome to the show. We really appreciate it. And if I may, just for a moment, I want to put myself in the position of just a regular person that uses social networks. It could be Facebook, any one of them. Okay, Frank, if you could put yourself in their shoes for a second, and one of your kids actually got out on the social networks and people were, say, stalking them, harassing them, or manipulating them, what would you do? And I'm not holding you to this, but can you give us an idea of what you would do?
Well, you know, I think that one of the most important things to do here is to really, first of all, be aware of the kids' conduct. You know, be aware of what's going on in their lives and be really have a close monitoring of that. And as those things develop, as those sorts of things develop, I think it's really important to talk about it and to be assessing the threat and to make sure that the people that are doing these sort of menacing things know this is not okay. You know, this is really, this is not just another world where people can just do whatever they want, but there are standards of behavior. And then if it continues, then I think the question becomes, you know, do you try to get authorities involved or you just try to get away from the social network? And that's a very hard choice.
Okay, thank you for that. Thank you for that.
One of the objections to that last option or approach to it is that the online environment, the being online, is so much a part of life today that it would be like saying, well, you know, just avoid this person and don't go to the marketplace. You know, don't you don't have to buy food from now on. Because there's so much going on, and actually, in the past, there have been people basically hounded off of the internet that had made their living and their reputation on the internet. So
that's so true. That's such a huge problem. I mean, I think of the case of Kathy Sierra, you know, who just was a really expert tech blogger and just had people sort of irrationally come out of the blue and start harassing her. And, you know, I've seen some people do self-help, like they find out, well, who are my harassers, and can I tell someone, like their employer, their school, somebody, where it might make a difference? Can I tell them, hey, you know, this person is harassing me? I know some bloggers that have actually tried that approach. I've never tried it, but I think it's, you know, it seems like on some level turnabout is fair play.
Well, the advice that young people are getting is to get law enforcement involved, at least to say, you know, this is happening. Let's get back to this idea of what has been promised by well, basically Facebook, I suppose, is the biggest case in the law, although I don't know if you know of other internet firms that have had cases brought against them, please say so. But they had a verified apps program and claimed that it certified the security of participating apps. Did it do that?
Well, you know, I have to admit, I'm not that up on exactly what's going on with the security of apps and Facebook's assurances about that. I would have to learn more about, you know, what exactly they do in terms of reviewing those apps. But I do think that it's important for people to realize that, you know, there are very scary things that can happen, say, if an app goes haywire or something like that. And, you know, that a lot of the time that there may be security assurances made that are not adequately audited. I think you're putting your finger on something that is a really critical issue, which is when security and privacy assurances are made, who's auditing it? And I don't think that the Federal Trade Commission has enough people to do that. I know that California has actually been a leader in trying to, you know, look out for its citizens. But it's just, I don't think it's adequate enough right now. And I think we need to see the tech companies step up and, say, fund outside auditors that would help us understand this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that more in the next segment. So coming up next, we'll talk about what kind of promises have been made and who are the regulatory bodies that are currently responsible for backing this up.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
Kelly Keller, an intellectual property attorney specializing in internet law and social media issues. Join me on The Kelly Keller Show right here on the Social Network Station. Together with my guests, we will tackle tough legal problems presented by the ever-increasing use of social media in everyday business. Through dynamic conversations, we will discuss your rights and responsibilities in the new media world so the hard work you have put into developing your brand, business, and products does not go to waste. How does the law's response to the social media explosion affect you? Join me on The Kelly Keller Show to learn more.
Now, back to The Social Network Show.
We're back talking with Frank Pasquale of the University of Maryland Law School. And Frank, we were getting into the question of claims made by Facebook that they were not living up to and what the consequences or lack thereof were. For instance, if a person deactivated or deleted an account, we like to think that's gone. But we also hear that something up on the web is there forever. So how does that work? Has Facebook allowed access to that sort of content?
In terms of deleted accounts, well, you know, in terms of the deleted accounts, like I'm sorry, Dr. J. I'm really sorry that I'm not that aware in terms of deleted accounts what exactly is going on presently. I know that there are people who, though within their account. Like Max Schrems is this Austrian law student, and under European law, he was able to get access to a lot of material from Facebook. And when he got access to it, what he found out was that there was a lot of stuff in there that he thought he had deleted permanently that was somehow still in the record. Or there was embarrassing stuff that, you know, he was, like the fact that he was friends with someone for a while, then befriended them, sort of sensitive content like that. And I think that that's something that, you know, we need more education on in terms of people understanding, you know, how much stuff is being kept? Is everything being kept? Is anything I ever looked at being kept? You know, et cetera. Those sorts of things I think are a very interesting question for the Facebook folks to get across. And I think that it's, but of course, I also think though, one of the problems in privacy law discourse right now is that a lot of people are so focused on, well, I want to control my data, you know, and if I can understand everything, then, you know, anything goes. And I think we have to sort of think, well, know, maybe we need more substantive rules. You know, maybe we have to have a rule that, for example, you know, you really, that the companies can't keep certain information, or can't particularly transfer certain information out, you know, to other entities. Like, I'm very concerned, for example, if I ever see, like, ads for, say, particular medical conditions. Like, say if someone's, you know, they say, I have a cough and a cold and a sneeze and something else, you know, or if they talk about their relative with breast cancer or something. That really concerns me that, you know, that might get outside the confines of the Facebook ecosystem to other marketers and other entities, and then I may somehow be discriminated against, maybe on the basis of something that's totally untrue. But even if it is true, you know, even let's say that a person does have cancer and they talk about their cancer on Facebook, should that even be getting out to anyone?
Yeah, that has been an issue. There have been cases where that's come up. And the another example of that sort of data aggregation, where there are companies like Axiom, for example, that are gathering humongous amounts of data. And even though it is popularly passed off as anonymous, it really is possible in some cases, because of unusual aspects of the data, to identify the people. And the reason Gmail is free is because Google reads the email, and that is on the basis on which the ads show up. And it's a little freaky to have mentioned something in an email to someone and then see an ad show up on the side of your email. And so it's you can opt out of that. But again, there's this question, and we should talk about that, the difference between it being an active choice to accept something, whether it be data aggregation for commercial uses or government surveillance or the X-rated material, such as they're discussing in the UK now, versus an active choice to receive it.
Yes, that's a great point. I mean, I think that's the UK developments are quite something. I mean, it's a very interesting sort of proposal out there in terms of, you know, opting in to certain adult content. And I think it will protect a lot of kids from stuff that they shouldn't be seeing. But, you know, I don't know, in terms of the existing First Amendment jurisprudence in the U.S., it's hard to know exactly how well that would stand up. I have no, I mean, it's tricky. But I think your earlier point, though, about the data aggregation and consent, that is so interesting, because I think that the data, when people are consenting, I think we need to focus less on, you know, I want certain data out, than to say, wait a second, you know, there should just be a default that health data is sacred. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's just like, that's something like with health and possibly with some financial information, possibly with some other things, you know. Or if it ever goes beyond a certain circle, like at the beginning of your, and you're constantly reminded, it would be nice to be reminded, you know, here's the group of people that can possibly get it, and here's the people they could transfer the data to, and here's the people they could transfer the data to. I think people, once they understood that, they would be a little more suspicious. But the larger thing, though, is just let's have a society where, you know, we really have strong norms about this stuff, and not just say, oh, privacy's dead. You know, because I just hear that so often. Mm-hmm. I hear so often.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like roll over and accept it type of thing, and it's not, it doesn't have to be that way. I think that there's been cases in the past where there's tremendous sea change occur because of popular opinion, and the popular opinion, I think it's pretty safe to say, is people don't like the feeling that they're being spied on or that Big Brother is looking over their shoulder, etc. And do you think that there is a possibility of, if the FTC hasn't got enough manpower, doesn't have enough teeth behind authority and strong enough penalties, that the marketplace can influence this? You know, if we reward social networks, which is part of what the Social Network Association is looking to do, reward those networks that do respect privacy and safety for kids, etc., that this can make a difference in what's acceptable, what the norms are, as you mentioned.
Well, you know, I think I have a couple of thoughts about that. I mean, I think that there are definitely sites, websites that are sort of below the platform level. They could be rewarded and punished. You know, like if NewYorkTimes.com or some of these other websites, like if they have a really bad policy, I can see people going to the LA Times or going to the Deseret News or going to other newspapers. And similarly, you know, you could think about that for a number of other sort of websites that are like providing content. I can see that rebellion. My worry though is that with Facebook, it's sort of like if I want to see like updates and interesting stuff and pictures from my friends, like that's the only place I can go. So I don't know if I could really, I mean, I guess I can, it's like your earlier point about you have to be online, like even for some kids or whoever, or even for, and definitely for adults that are looking for career opportunities or keeping in touch with their colleagues and friends and the rest. It's hard to know. So I don't really know. I mean, I guess maybe the ultimate source of pressure might be on the advertisers at the networks. Maybe that might be the place to go. But it's a very interesting question, a difficult one, you know, in terms of how do you get a consumer response. And I've also noticed, you know, sometimes they have these votes, you know, advisory votes on, say, Facebook's going to change a policy. Do you want this or not? And but the problem is it's just most people are just too busy to vote, you know, or they don't really understand, or they don't really, you know, and that's a hard, I don't think democracy always the answer either. It has to be sort of like, you know, experts who really think about this stuff and care about it and can think about the long-term implications of the policy. It's not necessarily just let's have a big up and down vote on, you know, this complicated privacy policy. So yeah, it's something we really have to think through as a nation and as consumers. Definitely.
Well, much of the world apparently views, you know, instead of saying the internet, they'll say Facebook, that Facebook is so much what they use on their phones and so on, that that is defining the internet for them. So I think that's an important piece of the picture. I wonder, the niche networks seem to be developing because of the fact that the Facebook is such a huge world, you might say. There's, you know, there's so many people out there, and if your friends' friends and their friends, the whole idea of a network is, to me, a little inapplicable to actual personal relationships, because even on LinkedIn, which is a pretty professional and not too crazy a network, there's people that, you know, endorse me for something, and I don't really even remember if I know, I don't think I know them, you know? So I'm not sure exactly how they can endorse something, but it's something that is definitely, it's an interesting world, and I think that is one of the essential things is to keep in mind that it is developing as a part of our perception of the world, just like we have eyes and ears to perceive the world that we can visually see and hear. We have developed this cyberspace sense that we perceive the world in cyberspace.
I love that way of putting it. That's a wonderful way of putting it. And yeah, it's absolutely an extension of ourselves, of our personality. I like also the way of thinking that, like, there's a digital self out there. It's us. It's like we have sort of a physical self and this digital self, and you know, as more and more life moves on to computers, the digital self becomes more important than the self, you know, in some way. I mean, in some kind, you know, like in looking for a job, you know, I really want to make sure that the online presence that I have out there is professional, that it's careful, that there's no sort of, you know, slanderous attacks out there, et cetera. And if there are some, that could really hurt in looking for a job or doing other things.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Frank. Appreciate your thoughts.
Want to be a guest on The Social Network Show? Email us at guest@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. The only thing I didn't learn in school today is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show. And Jim Nico and I, Jane Karwoski, your host, we are going to be talking with Laura Davis. She is the head publisher at Media Planet. And we're very proud to be a part of her upcoming violence prevention campaign. And previous to that, Laura's had campaigns that have gone national in USA Today, one of which, the most recent, was Employing America, in which she worked with President Clinton on focusing on work in America and American-made products. Careers in healthcare was another one, healthy relationships, full figure fashion. So these, if you're a reader of USA Today, you'll have seen probably some of the inserts that Laura's worked on. Laura, welcome and thank you for coming.
Oh, no, thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
Well, you know, I'm not surprised that you have such a beautiful musical voice because you've been in musical theater, right?
I have. That's actually where I started, funny enough, which it's a little strange because people ask all the time, well, how do you go from acting and singing to publishing? But honestly, it's a very artistic field, and I have the opportunity to work with so many different people that for me, it wasn't that much of a stretch. You know, it's communicating with people, and it's being able to convey a message, which is somewhat similar to, you know, what I used to do when I went to college. So, you know, it's not that far off.
Right. Well, tell you what, can you explain, first of all, what it is you do in the context of the whole media enterprise, you might say? Where does...
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my company, Media Planet, what we do is we're an independent publishing house, and we're the leader in themed media. So we work with the 7 biggest newspapers across the country to kind of bring these niche advocacy and awareness campaigns to life. So we work with, oh my goodness, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. I just finished up another campaign with the Washington Post, and of course, USA Today. And what we do with these campaigns, and if you can picture them, they're, you know, 8 to 24 page inserts that go within the newspaper. What we do with them is we unite all of the leaders in that particular industry that we're working with to this platform to talk about a message, to convey that message to readers, and to create a call to action. What we want to do is we want to see change, and we want to make as much change as possible. We want to inform our readers, but we also want them to have an opportunity to see what they can do with the information we present to them. That's kind of, you know, the whole basis of what the company does. And, you know, we've focused on print for, I guess, 10 years now, and we're just beginning to delve into digital and online, because the possibilities online and you know, the World Wide Web, I guess, is just endless. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the opportunity to reach so many different people. I mean, when we publish these campaigns and then we, you know, put the digital campaign online, it crosses boundaries for people. You know, we reach individuals in other countries. We reach people that don't have access to USA Today. You know, maybe they're not subscribers, or maybe, you know, they're not even in, you know, the United States. So it's very exciting for us, because I think that it's important to get all these different messages out to people so that we can change our world and make it a better place.
Thank you, Laura. This is Jim Nico, and I want to thank you for that, as usual, brilliant discourse on what you're doing and why and how. And thank you for coming on the Social Network Show.
Oh, no, thank you so much. I really appreciate being here.
Well, Laura, as you know, I having worked with you and in preparation for the campaign, we want to thank USA Today. We want to thank Media Planet. We believe that you're on the very, very cutting edge in mainstream media because, bottom line, girls especially and boys are suffering and some are dying because of crimes that may occur in the brick and mortar world that then get go viral, as they say, in cyberspace. And our job and our goal, our mission, is to alleviate that as quickly as possible to help girls and boys be safe online. So thank you so much for coming and in the campaign.
Oh, absolutely. It's such an important campaign, this next one that we're doing in USA Today on violence prevention, specifically because we're emphasizing the fact that this is an issue that can be solved. This is something that everyone can get behind, and really what you can do is you can be a bystander or you can be an upstander. And we're asking our readers to be upstanders.
Exactly.
It goes back to the Media Planet concept, what we believe in, which is creating a call to action. You know, don't just read this information now that you have access to it and you can see, you know, what we'll be talking about in the campaign, various ways to prevent violence. Don't just, you know, absorb that information, but use it in your everyday life. And I think that in terms of talking about adolescence, it's very, very important. It's so, so important because it's at a time when, you know, kids are developing and becoming, you know, individuals. They're finding their identity. And you want to make sure that they're protected so that it doesn't hurt them in the future. And, you know, with bullying, with cyberbullying, with the internet being a seemingly infinite space, you have to ask yourself, how do you contain something like that? And we want to make sure that we address that head on with you and, you know, talk about the different solutions and make sure that people understand the warning signs and really how to protect their children.
Well, Laura, that's perfect. And the essence then is, what can we do to help on this very important issue, violence prevention campaign, to keep people engaged? Well, the first thing they can do is listen to this show with you. And we're going to be broadcasting the show around the world, and anyone with internet access, even phone access, will be able to listen to you. And so that's number one. Number two, the Social Network Association, we are asking everyone worldwide to join, because the bottom line is the association, which I founded and Dr. J is my partner, et cetera. The essence of the association is to help people remain or get safe online. So that's going to be a voting-based association. In other words, we'll be able to vote for social networks that help boys and girls be safe and adults online. And that will all culminate with the Social Network Awards at the Social Network Expo, which we are hoping everyone attends.
That's brilliant, because I think that you can't prevent children from using social media, right? It's not possible. And you don't want to, because in this day and age, it's a new form of communicating with others. And I don't think that that's something we can avoid. And we shouldn't. It's wonderful. Technology is a wonderful thing. But it's important to be safe. It's important to be able to monitor kids and make sure that they're okay online. And so I think that what you're doing is absolutely wonderful, and it's very much needed.
You know, Laura, you hear a lot of times, well, we don't want to police the internet. And that could mean a lot of different things to different people, of course. But it being a parallel world, you might say, to the face-to-face world, we have law enforcement in the physical world. I don't know if anybody would suggest that we not have law enforcement in the physical world, or even at least norms and standards and some kind of community repercussions for misbehavior. And yet, it sort of sounds like that's what people are suggesting in the virtual world.
I agree with you. I think isn't that interesting? I think that the problem is that we're all so new to this. And I think that there's a lot to explore in terms of, you know, safety and policing the internet, and I don't know if we've grasped the full concept as to how to do that. And I think that there's a gray area as to what people can consider okay and what's not okay. And I think that it's definitely something that we need to make sure, you know, unfolds for the sake of everybody, not just children, but anybody can be a target on the internet in right. various ways, you know, and it's important to make sure that we protect people, because now we do. We have, as you said, this virtual world. And, you know, is it very much different than the physical world? Well, you know, as far as dangers are concerned, not necessarily.
Mm-hmm. And there's And even a question of movement, you know, I'm thinking of comparing the physical world with the virtual. And in the physical world, we know when we go somewhere, we have to take steps to get there. And yet in the virtual world, it's different. You know, you can suddenly be somewhere that you didn't know you were going to get. And there's neighborhoods, you might say, that are very threatening. And I suppose, you know, really a chat room could be like that. There's often a lot of abuse. I'm often amazed at what people will post in comments, you know, like on YouTube or something. I'm thinking, oh, what the vitriol. The vitriol is just...
I agree with you. I think what it is that the internet allows people to kind of be anonymous. You can be whoever you want on the internet. And so you can be a very different person in the physical world, you know, significantly different than you are in, you know, the virtual one. And I think that that's where the danger lies. There's this anonymity that people say, well, I can be whoever I want. This is an open playground almost, and that can be a very frightening thing. Things are very almost scarily accessible. You can go anywhere, as you said.
Let's continue on this thought after our break, and we'll be right back with Laura Davis of Media Planet.
More of the Social Network Show in just 1 minute.
Kelly Keller, an intellectual property attorney specializing in internet law and social media issues. Join me on The Kelly Keller Show right here on the Social Network Station. Together with my guests, we will tackle tough legal problems presented by the ever-increasing use of social media in everyday business. Through dynamic conversations, we will discuss your rights and responsibilities in the new media world, so the hard work you have put into developing your brand, business, and products does not go to waste. How does the law's response to the social media explosion affect you? Join me on The Kelly Keller Show to learn more.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
We're speaking with Laura Davis of Media Planet, head publisher there, and we are working with her on a violence prevention campaign coming up. And, you know, Laura, I think it might be interesting to compare violence prevention in the physical world with that in the virtual world and how they blend in and overlap with the what has been your take so far on people you've been talking with about violence prevention in the normal, old-fashioned sense of preventing physical violence?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've had the opportunity to talk with a lot of different companies that have initiatives in this area, both in, you know, domestic violence, for instance, and cyberbullying and interracial violence. And it's an interesting thing because the way that it's conveyed is somewhat different in that with domestic violence, for instance, it's something that, you know, the victims want to keep secret, but there's physical evidence almost, you know, mm-hmm. you can see it on their bodies and, you know, whatnot. But what's interesting is the similarities between, for instance, domestic violence and cyberbullying in the emotional realm. You can be emotionally scarred as a result of what happens to you when someone says something to you, whether it's to your face or if it's online. But the thing about online is that it can remain online for forever, pretty much. You can always have evidence there of someone attacking you or something along those lines, and it's a very scary thing. You know, it's frightening to think that someone can post something about you. It can go absolutely viral, whereas, you know, with domestic violence, it's usually somewhat secretive. You know, it's contained. You can't contain what happens on the internet. You can't contain it. It's very, very difficult. And, you know, it doesn't take long for these kinds of things to go viral when something, you know, an incident occurs. Maybe there's a kid in school who's being bullied online or, you know, a picture is sent and it's all of a sudden everywhere. All over online, not just kids, you know, from their school seeing it, but everywhere. And that's a scary thing. It's a very scary thing, and it's something that can follow you for years to come. So I think that's the major difference that I found between, for instance, you know, the physical world and violence and that of online.
Laura, you said something earlier, which was not only brilliant, but actually overlaps with what has been said on the show here. Sandy Garasino, for example, former Crown prosecutor out of Canada. I want to mention Red Hood Project, one of our partners. But you said something, you used the word playground. And Sandy Garasino uses the word. You're using the word. That seems to be, you seem to have hit a common thread. If you think of the social network, Facebook, Twitter, any of the social networks, as playgrounds in relation to kids, it immediately becomes analogous to the physical world. In other words, if we think of social network Facebook as a playground in that sense, you ask yourself, is it dangerous? Is it safe? Does it need to change? Who's supervising the playground? You wonder then what can be done. And this is why your campaign, the campaign that we've been partnering with you on and we're evolving violence prevention campaign, to be specific, is so important. It's a dangerous playground right now. And what do you think about that analogy? Does that work for you?
It absolutely does. I think it's brilliant in that you're completely spot on. Where is, you know, someone to monitor this? You talk about this playground and, you know, you think about the possibilities. There's so many possibilities online, both positive and negative. But there needs to be, as we discussed before, someone to police this. There needs to be boundaries. It's a very frightening thing when you don't have boundaries. And the internet is seemingly endless. It's as though, you know, the possibilities are just infinite. You want to make sure that you do, in fact, have that opportunity to, you know, create those lines that should not be crossed. And I think that that's what we need to make sure that we do with this campaign. We need to say, here are the lines, here are the boundaries, here's what we can do in order to make sure that no one crosses them.
That is the essence, Laura. And to take this one step further, would you agree that, like a school playground, that basically the people that are in charge of the playground, the people in charge at the school, are the ones in charge of the safety on the playground? So, in the sense of Facebook, if it's Facebook is the playground, it's the owners of Facebook who are in charge of putting forth the safety. Would you agree?
I would say that that's very true. Absolutely. It's very important to take the responsibility of your own creation.
Thank you. And we'll be developing that concept throughout the campaign. That's a theme that you hit on, Sandy Garasino, RedHoodProject.com is hit on. And thank you for your input on that. Dr. J?
Well, there, I noticed that one of your partners is called the National School Climate Center, and schools are definitely struggling with, well, of course, trying to deal with violence, of course, but also cyber violence, because it does go over into the face-to-face world a lot of times, especially in its effects. So the difference, though, is that schools are a public service, you might say. They are often running in the red, or people, you know, we know teachers are not infamously well paid. And yet, if you look at the social network playground, the cyberspace playground, they are generating huge amounts of revenue. So certainly, if a public service like the schools can take safety seriously when they have very little to gain monetarily, then that is why we're hoping to bring this to public awareness. Look, when you're making this much revenue, you have an obligation to make it safe, and that is one of the costs of doing business.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think that you have to take into consideration when you create a service for people, whether it's online or otherwise, you have to also take into consideration how that service is going to affect the individuals that use it. And there are obviously positive effects, but there are negative effects as well, and you have to be able to take full responsibility for both, I think, and, you know, act accordingly. And with these social media sites, it's so, so important, you know, to take into consideration that there are all different kinds of people that are using this site. And, you know, again, it goes back to making sure that this can be monitored, making sure that, you know, kids can be kept safe and that there are tools available in order to ensure that.
In the meantime, Laura, we would like to refer our listeners to the socialnetworkassociation.com. We have a resource guide there that is worldwide. People that are in trouble now, or their kids, they think maybe their kids are in trouble, can go to this resource guide. They can download it. They can get help now. So what can we expect in the campaign in the near future? How do you see this evolving, and how can we build the buzz, so to speak, so we can get maximum impact?
Well, you know, this is the first edition that we've ever tried of violence prevention. And the reason why we hadn't done it in the past was because we just didn't know what issues to focus on and who to partner with. And it was a little bit of a risk on our part because it can be somewhat controversial, and it's something that we're not accustomed to talking about in our campaigns. But we felt that, you know, we need this. This is something that our country and our world needs. It needs to be seen. So, you know, when we talk about solving the issues of violence, we want to make sure that we can transform this into a series, making sure that perhaps we talk about, you know, maybe having a general focus on violence and then a hyper focus on some other things in additions to come. But I think that what we can definitely expect is people taking notice. There are so many things that I am learning just from having different conversations with people in the space. And I get off the phone and I say, I did not know that this was such an issue. I didn't know. And, you know, even with cyberbullying, you don't necessarily realize how much of an issue it is if it doesn't affect you directly. But the truth of the matter is that at the end of the day, it does affect all of us. And so it takes all of us to do something about it. And that's what we want to do with this campaign. And you know, that's what we hope for the future as it evolves, just to get more people involved, just to get more people understanding what the issues are. And then, of course, to in turn act on positive ways to alleviate these issues.
Well, Laura, we congratulate you and welcome you to as partners to do this beginning level of the series. And we are in for the long haul. We know this is a marathon, as Dr. J likes to say. So this can be the first of many campaigns. Certainly our media company can align with yours to use the social network show, the social network station, and even the social network magazine, which we're preparing to publish, in the cause here for safety in general. And like you say, hyper-focused on various aspects, whether it's child safety, et cetera. So please let us know anything we can do to help. And is there anything we should do now? Is there anywhere where we can direct anyone to give you the exposure you'd like now?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, just going to our site, mediaplanet.com,
okay.
We have an array of campaigns right now. This one is going to hit newsstands at the end of September, and it's going to be on the web as well. We're making a whole digital campaign. It's going to live on its own site, and when this hits newsstands on September 27th, you'll be able to see it. So definitely, you know, everyone should be able to check it out, read all of the articles, share it, and just get it in front of as many people as possible, because that's the way we're going to be able to solve these issues.
That sounds great, Laura. Thank you so much, Laura Davis of MediaPlanet.com. And remember to look for us on Twitter at SocialNetShow and at SocialNetShow2. And I would like to challenge you, our listener, to commit a random act of kindness today. The person, the recipient, may be someone who has been bullied, someone who has been a victim of violence, and you never know how much that can help give them a boost that they need to get through the day.
Laura, thank you so much, and will you come back? You're an amazing guest.
Oh, thank you so much. Please have me anytime. I would absolutely love it.
Cool. Thank you. We'll be in touch, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.